classes today, so don't ask me to read anything. All right, I'll go ahead and call us to order for regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting April 19th. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Public comment number one, the comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Arden, did you want to come up now?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead and have a seat and introduce yourself, if you would.
Yeah, Arden Greiner from Sherman Township. Today was the last day for giving a written recommendation for modifications on the taxing entities for the Ames Research Park and all the economic development stuff. So I give you, you've got a copy of what I wrote in a hurry this morning, but I've been thinking about it for a long time. So this is on the consent agenda today. So we'll cover it now instead of moving it off the consent agenda. So I'll just read what I've written. The Story County Board of Supervisors, written recommendations for modifications to the proposed division of revenue. I don't think the TIF monies, the tax increment financial monies from the Colonesco area, they should not be spent outside of the taxing district where they are located. They should stay there. Those monies shouldn't be spent over for the Ames, especially for recreational. You know, I don't think we should be bonding and borrowing money for recreational purposes. I think, like in all this eminent domain discussions we've been having, you don't condemn for eminent domain, you don't do that for recreational, only for hard business. I don't think, personally, I don't think you should borrow money for recreational purposes. Point number two, after Story County Conservation is planning on spending $3.4 million for a park near the ISU research facility, in the agreement I brought up here a month or two ago, that it says that Story County, if it wishes to, can sell that whole investment in the park back to the ISU Research Park for $1. And that just doesn't make any sense to me why you'd invest $3.4 million. And that's under point I of the land ownership contract. So that's it, except for I'll go back up to that first one there where you're not supposed to be moving TIF monies around the different taxing areas. There was a bill this year in the Iowa State Senate, Senate file number 2006, that was going to prohibit moving taxes, TIF money from wind farms to other areas, other taxing entities. So that's definitely not out of line, and it's probably a coming thing, although it didn't go anywhere this year. That's all I've got today. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Arden.
Thank you, Arden, as usual. Thank you.
Next, agency reports, Lutheran Services and our annual report. You know, Lisa, but come on down anyway.
She must be working today.
Yes, yeah, she has a son in her
place. Yep.
My name is Alexis Bugger, and I work as part of LSI's People Place.
I'm Amber Suco. I'm the statewide manager of our supported community living services at LSI.
At People Place, we have a few different programs. We have a parent family development where since from July 1st till March 30th, we've had 40 new parents come, and we've served 41 children in that department. We also do a program called Crisis Child Care. We provide up to 72 hours of free child care for parents experiencing any emotional stress. If they have court and they don't have any other support or family nearby, they can call and we have providers that we can place their children with. From July 1st till March 30th, we've served 14 families, and 27 of those children have been unduplicated. They haven't used, they've only used the program once. And we also do a program called Parents as Teachers. It's an in-home visitation program to where parents and families can receive parent support and parenting tips from our licensed parent educators. And from July 1st till March 30th, we've had 40 families, and we've had 59 children use that service as well.
All right, so for our Services for People with Disabilities program, we serve approximately 910 individuals in 50 counties in the state. LSI as a whole serves all 99 counties, but specifically for this program, we're in 50 counties. The program that is most benefited by the asset funding is our hourly supported community living program, and we serve 445 people there. So kind of what we do is we support people in living full and meaningful lives. You know, they have intellectual disabilities or mental health issues, and we help them become as independent as they can in the community, which is a cost-effective measure to keep people out of places that are more institutional, because those services are much more expensive than the ones that are provided in our program in a community-based setting. So we track a number of different things for statewide outcomes to measure the success of the people that we're serving, to see how successful we're being in our program specifically. We send out all kinds of client satisfaction surveys. We track everything from staff retention to staff turnover and everything in between to really make sure that we're giving quality services to the people that we serve. So.
Any questions this morning?
No, thank you.
Thank you both. Next is consideration of minutes.
Approval.
Second. We've got a motion and a second. Any additions or corrections? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Aye. Consideration of claims.
Move approval.
Second.
Anything additional?
Good week.
Clinton?
Good week.
Mr. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Consent agenda. We need to add road closure 1652 through 1655, and utility permit 1658 and 1659.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second. Got a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Aye. And that takes us down to additional items, discussion and consideration of exploring the feasibility of merging case management units. Aaron Leewerts, Deb Nutt, and Carl West.
Oh, Deb got perfect timing.
Just slipped right in the door.
Right.
Good morning, Boris.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Three musketeers.
We thought we were going to be two there.
We would like to talk with the board about the possibility of entering into some conversations with Boone and Madison counties regarding the continuation of targeted case management services. Just briefly, as you know, with the changes of the managed care organizations coming in and overseeing and funding Medicaid services, case management is one of those services that has been sitting on the fence. For the past year and a half, as this has been discussed, two of the managed care organizations are taking the service in-house, and one of the organizations has indicated a willingness to partner with existing agencies to provide case management to individuals that have mental health or mental retardation and developmental disabilities. And that's primarily the population that our unit has been serving now for the last couple of years. A couple of weeks ago, this board approved amending the 20E agreement with Central Iowa Case Management for ending that agreement on June 30th of 2016. That particular agreement involves Story, Franklin, and Hardin counties, and so that's in place. We'll move forward with that. But Boone County has reached out to us, has indicated an interest in discussing whether or not we want to join their 2080 agreement in providing case management services under the Medicaid or the managed care organization contract with AmeriHealth Caritas. So we would have to talk about numbers of clients, how many staff is necessary, billing functions, administrative functions, that kind of thing. We would look at discontinuing our Medicaid provider number, which has been the number we've been using for Central Iowa case management, but discontinuing that number, going under Moon County's number, and then using their rate, which is about double our rate at this point in time.
And so this morning, what you're asking for is to go study whether this is something in Story County's best interest, right? I think I should, Deb, I know I shared with you and Carl and Aaron, I think I shared with you. I'm really, really supportive of this idea, but I don't believe that Story County can do a whole lot of supplementation in order to run the program. It needs to be kind of self-standing. Now, maybe with the rates that Boone, for whatever reason, have been able to charge, we can make that happen. I would be really interested in taking a look at it. But what I don't want to do is, you know, so we've been really upfront with our staff all the way through. This is what's happening. I don't want to give them any false hope if this is not something that we're going to be able to do. So I would think it would need to be a really short window that we take to really look at this and see if it's something we can do or not, because I don't want to leave our staff hanging with what's coming or not coming.
Yes, we agree.
Yeah, and I think in following on this comment, I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you too, Deb, on this concept primarily because, you know, when we talked about the original 2080 agreement through the region and its role and so forth, we did not anticipate what was happening in several of our counties with case management under the new managed care proposal, and some just about been eliminated, and so there are still clients that need to be served, and their staff that is either transitioning to other responsibilities, etc. But primarily, when you look at the total population of Story County and the clients there, there's going to be a larger number of clients that will be impacted no matter how we do it. So the idea of looking at a joint or new 2080 or whatever, I think has some merit, providing that we feel like that it's certainly going to be something that's going to enhance and continuation of service to clients. And also, as Rick said, the staff that we currently have in place now, how do we do that? And I know that you guys will do a good job of communicating, but I think it's very important, depending on the action that we take here today, that there is that discussion, that communication with staff, that what we're really doing is looking at the feasibility of this. We're making no decisions as of right now, so that they have an opportunity to ask questions in case some may come up.
So is AmeriHealth's business model that they're going to contract for the service provision? So the managed care companies have a choice to make, right? Either they can provide the services directly, they hire staff and go, or you can contract with an outside entity to provide it. Is this AmeriHealth's model statewide, or is it unique to Boone, the agreement with Boone?
No, it's statewide, to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they're planning on providing the services without staffing to do it. They're going to contract out to provide.
Right.
And I am cautiously optimistic because this is still a brand new Medicaid system with these MCOs. At least for now, their model is to contract with existing organizations to provide the case management services. That's not to say, because there's a contract involved, and if we were to move forward with this, there would have to be a contract signed. That's not to say they decide 2 years down the road, we're going to end the contract and we're going to pull this service in-house. They can make that decision at any point in time and give proper notice. Okay. But for right now, that is what they plan on contracting.
Well, I'd be interested in learning more, so I'm going to move approval of exploring feasibility of merging our case management unit with the existing one in Boone.
Second.
A motion and a second. And in the spirit of full disclosure, I need to make it known that I have a daughter that receives Medicaid services, and her MCO would be, or is, AmeriHealth Caritas. So I have an interest in, I would love to see her caseworker stay local. So with that, I'm gonna remove myself from this discussion and vote. So Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot is going to recuse himself, and that passes. Thank you. Both, or all three of you. All right.
Now, are you sure that neither one of you want to say anything, huh?
Okay. Thank you.
Discussion and consideration of agreement with Precision Pipeline, LLC, for the temporary use of the roadway. Darren Moon. Okay.
Morning. I just want to be clear, this is just to get approval of the form. This isn't the final approval of this agreement. I just want to get the format down before the pipeline signs it, and I bring it back to the board for final approval. I'll run through just a couple highlighted areas on the form. First of all, the agreement's going to be with the Precision Pipeline that's on the form already. That's the contractor the pipeline hires. This isn't the pipeline itself we're agreeing this with. They're going to be the ones doing all the hauling and the construction out there. References in Exhibit A, which is the map that shows the haul routes. That's not attached now. They're still working out the details on that. In my opinion, they have 3 or 4 miles of road on there that don't need to be there, and they're really highly populated roads, so I just didn't try to get those off, so I'm working on that. But when the final form comes back, it'll have the map attached. But it's generally, you know, a mile each way of the pipeline. It angles through the county. Down to number 5, we're going to require a certificate of general liability. That will be separate from the liability that the pipeline also is required at the utilities board. This is through the contractor itself. On the back side, or the second page, number 9, one of the main reasons for this agreement is for dust control. So we're going to require dust control be put down the intersections and in front of all residences on the roads that are shown on that haul route map. And then under 16, a last minute change, we require a surety bond of $75,000. And originally we were going to have this in the agreement, but the pipeline would rather we pull it off of this agreement and the bond would be actually through the pipeline, which I'm more comfortable with. They'll probably be more able to back that bond. And there could be other damage, you know, the pipeline has come up. We can run against this bond too. So I'm more comfortable taking it out and having the pipeline sign it. So those are the main items. That'd be the only change to the form. We just removed 16 off.
So 16 would come off, but we could require that we have a bond from the pipeline.
Dakota Access.
From Dakota Access before we sign anything like this.
Yes.
Okay. And is that, has a figure been agreed upon or talked about at this point? What the bond would be total?
Yeah, generally when we, even with the wind turbines and stuff, we have an estimate about 5,000 a mile we make a bond for possible road damages. I'm not anticipating a lot of road damages, but this will happen midsummer. The roads should be in better condition than they are now. There's about 15 loads of pipe that come per mile, and then there'll be construction traffic. So it won't be a lot of heavy loads coming through, so I don't anticipate a lot of damage, but the 75 should cover any damage. If it's more than that, the agreement covers that too, but this is a general form a lot of the counties are using, so it's similar to a lot of the other counties, and there's a lot of wide variations in that, the bond amount.
Yeah, didn't somebody go big dollars on that bond amount?
Yeah, but I think the pipeline might try to fight that. It's not realistic.
How high did it?
$5 million, I think somebody proposing.
I like the form. I would move approval of the form as it is in front of us, with the exception of item 16 removed.
Second. And this is the, I think in your email, this was Ethan had taken a look at this and so forth in the assistant county attorney's office. Okay.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second to approve the form as submitted with the with item number 16, the surety bond item removed. Is there anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
So I'll wait off and I won't sign anything today.
All right, I'll wait until we get to our meeting.
Discussion and consideration of an agreement. No, we've done that. We flipped the page. Discussion and consideration of, one, hiring a park superintendent, and two, the placement of the financial data manager in the compensation schedule matrix in Story County Conservation. Matt Cox.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I'm here this morning to ask for your consideration of a couple personnel items that had been discussed and approved with the Conservation Board. The first one is, as you all know, we have a retirement coming in May. And we also approved a new position in the FY17 budget for taking up later in the year. Timing of that new position would be dependent on, would be flexible one way or the other. What I'm asking to do here, and the Conservation Board has approved that, is to hire that position sooner, and so hire that position now, and then not hire the refill, the position that's going to go vacant through retirement, until such a time comes that we revisit that with the funding that is available and the new funding that's available in the FY17 budget. Mm-hmm. So that is that new position, however, grades a little bit higher than the existing position, to the tune of just shy of $5,000 annually. And so I'm asking for the approval to move ahead with that plan. Now, that funding, of course, is going to be dependent on when we would get someone in that position, if it's an internal promotion or internal applicant, or if it's an external, all of that comes to play with timing and what's available or how much this costs in the end with when we bring that person.
And we originally might budget at this position to begin January 1st, right?
Correct. So, correct.
All right. So it seems to me you got a couple ways that I would be in favor of you handling this. First of all, I think it makes perfect sense from my perspective that we know we're going to hire this position. You got an opening now. It makes sense to kind of start at the top and work your way down in terms of filling positions. So I'm in favor of you filling the position that we did not fund until January 1st, funding that sooner rather than later once you have your retirement. But I want you to find a way to make that work within your existing budget, and I think there's two ways you can that'll happen. One, depends on when you actually identify somebody and hire them after the retirement occurs, as to how much funding, maximum in my mind of $5,000. And the second way you handle it is you don't fill that secondary position, the one you're leaving open, until such time, so maybe it's February or March, until such time as you can afford it within your already approved salary line item. So it requires you maybe to wait a little longer than you would want to on filling the second position.
And that second position is to be determined on the pay on that one.
Absolutely.
As it is. So until we get a little further down the road and know what that second position would be.
Sure, and so our role in all this is simply budgetary, right? It's dollars and cents. And so what I'm suggesting is I'm in full support of what you're proposing here, but I'm not in full support of throwing more dollars in. I want you to manage the dollars you already have approved for FY17 to make this happen. I don't know if that's close for you.
To echo that this was brought before the Conservation Board, Mike did come and explain. However, at that time, he thought that the salary differential would pretty much be a wash and that it would not be substantial or some differences. We did have a phone conversation the other day regarding this, and I believe that I echoed the sentiments that you had just shared in talking with Alyssa and so forth. And based on what we've done with other departments in similar roles, we felt that this was something that needed to be done internally within his existing budget. And the other question was regarding the timing for placing an ad and trying to find out eligible candidates and so forth. And my comment was, is until you've actually reached out to find out who's available and are interested, by going through the job announcement or search doesn't mean that we're awarding a salary at this point. It's just the beginning of that process, and I thought that, you know, he should be able to go ahead and do that, because depending on who's selected, it may or may not be at this particular figure, whether it's someone from internally or from outside. But what I'm assuming, Mike, and what I need to ask you is what you're looking at, the park ranger position itself, the nature of the park ranger, which would include the law enforcement training, I would assume, and those types of things. So those are things that are normally wouldn't be factored in, because the current person already has that. So this would be, we would have to have, you would have to absorb that cost. And then the other question would be, is didn't we have some kind of a stipulation that if we paid for law enforcement things, that they had to commit to be with Story County for X number of years, otherwise they would have to pay us back, you know, for that portion of it?
Correct. Anyone we bring on, then we send through the academy, we have a 5-year contract with them.
Okay.
Well, and I just want to make sure we're all clear. So as I understand this position, this changes the structure of conservation. Right now the rangers report to Mike.
Right.
Now they'll be reporting to this park superintendent when a person is identified and hired.
Correct.
Right.
And that's the discussion we had. We had that discussion.
As part of the budget. But what we said is we weren't going to do that until January 1st. Now what I think is happening here, and I'll make the motion, that we go ahead and approve the hiring of the park superintendent as soon as there's an open position within conservation. But let's make it really clear, we're not suggesting that we're going to put additional dollars into your salary line item.
Right.
That's my motion.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Is there anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye.
So there is one other item here, and that is on the placement of one staff position into the newly created pay matrix. We've got one position that is not in the bargaining unit. That if we place that position, and this is what I'm asking to do, if we place that position in a comparable manner in which we use to place bargaining positions into that matrix, then that means we place that position at two steps higher than where they would be placed in normally. And so that difference is about $1,800.
Yeah, and so I think, Mike, you and I disagree on the standard placement based on those bargaining. Now, clearly we had some exceptions in the bargaining unit, and there's no question there were a couple people, a couple positions, that as we made the bargaining unit deal did, in fact, advance those two steps. But almost everybody and the way we're treating the rest of our non-bargaining unit staff, it's a one-step increase. And so where I come down on this one, at least at this point, is I don't want us to start singling out our non-bargaining unit staff and treating some one way and some another way, but I fully recognize that it is the conservation board. You've got a great financial data manager. I mean, this has nothing to do with that. And it's the conservation board to determine what we pay conservation. It's our responsibility to put dollars in the budget and then for you guys to figure it out. And so I feel the same way on this one that I did earlier. I'm all in favor of conservation determining how you pay your people. I just believe that we ought to put the dollars in the same way we're going to treat other county staff, and to me that's one grade, and I don't know what that means in terms of, does that cut that 1800 in half, or what does that do? I don't want to fund the full 1800 because I think it's one step too far.
And that's similar to the conversation that Mike and I had. When you're talking about bargaining unit employees and non-bargaining unit, the one or two employees that were moved the additional step, so they moved two steps, that was done in order to get the deal. We were in mediation at that point, and in order to avoid going to an arbitrator, that was the deal. And it's been this board's goal ever since I've been here, is to treat all the employees as equitably as possible. That doesn't necessarily mean that every single employee is going to get the same thing that a member of a bargaining unit gets. I mean, that's just the reality. It was our HR director's thought process through this, when she put these new policies together, that, you know, the county's implemented a 10-step plan for non-bargaining unit employees. When we put that plan in place, if an employee's been here longer than 10 years, the decision was made to place those employees at their current salary plus one step. And like Rick said, this is a two-step move, and I'm not sure what the cost would be, but the conversation you and I had would be, and it's similar to the first position. If the conservation board approved it and they can fund it through the appropriated amount, then that's the conservation board's determination thing.
I'd like to comment in terms of, in this particular issue, I'm in a kind of a unusual position as the liaison to the Conservation Board and privy to, what goes on. I attend all the meetings. I'm a non-voting member. But in past years, I was in the a voting member on the board and so forth. And so I'm having to wear two hats. Mm-hmm. And while during the discussion and so forth, I could certainly understand the need and his desire to move forward. Then when it comes into the funding aspect of it, I think in my conversation to Mike was that, Alyssa is in our HR, looks at this from a total Story County employment issue involving everyone, and we do look for our consistency and so forth. And so it's very difficult for me to understand where he's coming from, but also looking at the fiduciary or the funding aspect of it as a supervisor, I want to make sure that we are treating our conservation employees in a similar fashion that we would treat all others. And so I wish I had talked to Jessica about this, because I'm not sure whether it would be more proper for me to recuse myself at this point on this particular vote or not. But I do see it as a change in our policy. And I'm like Paul, is that if the board feels that this is the direction that they want to go, then that there should not be additional monies coming from the board of supervisors in the salary line item to fill that would have to be something that they would come from within their...
They figured out and absorb it. Yeah, Wayne, I think you're 100% right. So it's our role when it comes to conservation, Board of Health, and emergency management.
Right.
We don't have the same role with those that we do with IT and planning and zoning. Those work for us. Those other three work for their particular boards, and I want to be really consistent. This is the first one of these that we're dealing with. I want to be really consistent in how we handle these, because I believe we're going to get requests from all three of those boards to make exceptions to our existing policy and what funding we've tied to it. I think it is well within the Conservation Board's purview to make a decision to move one of their positions to a higher pay grade It's just if we start letting the dollars follow along with that, then we're not controlling the budget any longer. Those individual boards are controlling the budget. I know we're going to have one from emergency management, a special request coming out. Your Board of Health, you think there's going to be a special request there. I want to be consistent, and my consistent stance is conservation, you absolutely have the authority and right to put your employees where you feel like they need to go. But we funded it in the same way we're funding all non-bargaining unit staff, and I want to keep it that way, and I want to do the same thing with emergency management. I want to do the same thing with Board of Health. And so for that reason, I would move acknowledgement of the increase for the financial data manager, but make sure that the Conservation Board is well aware that there's no additional funding from the Board of Supervisors tied to that.
Well, and I will second it under that, because that would be my position all along. I certainly, you know, see the merit to it and the rationale for making this increase, but it would have to be something that they would want to absorb within their budget. So I will second it with that understanding.
All right, we've got a motion and a second to acknowledge the request and point out that the Conservation Board would need to find those funds internally for the $1,872 for the increase. Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. And you do a great job.
Yes, he does.
All right. Acknowledgement of receipt of an animal feeding operation construction permit application and master matrix for Happy Hula Hog Farms Hog Confinement Expansion, located northwest, one quarter of the southeast, one quarter, Section 34, Lincoln Township. And this is simply an acknowledgement of the receipt of the permit. It's been filed down in the Environmental Health Office. And the process is underway to score the matrix.
I would move approval of acknowledging the receipt of the animal feeding operation permit application.
This starts the clock, right?
Right.
Correct.
Three days. Second. A motion and a second to acknowledge the receipt of the CAFO application. Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Public forum number two, comments from the public. On items not on this agenda, the board may not take any action or comment to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future, or it's also.
Good morning.
Morning.
And I'm here to pitch an idea, or the possibility of an idea, to you, especially probably to Rick and to Wayne for follow-up, and I already bounced it off of Mike in the hallway before. The City of Ames Park and Rec Department is looking at trying to do a project with an inclusive playground and a Miracle League baseball field. And what we're talking about is a playground that can be used by handicapped individuals and children. And then the Miracle League playground is done in a lot of locations around the country. And that is for people with disabilities to be able to play baseball. It's half the size of a regular baseball field. And I attended a meeting last night that the Parks and Rec staff put on related to this project, and where Parks and Rec is in the process is trying to maybe spot a location. And this meeting last night was staff putting out to interested members of the public possible locations. And I attended as a member of my service organization, Kiwanis International. We've been affiliated with Miracle Fields, but I'm speaking only for myself this morning. It became apparent as the city staff ran the 7 or 8 possible park choices and the discussion among the public that there was no ideal place right now to put this. the closest being Ines Grove, and there were serious parking concerns by residents there. And during the discussion, someone talked about going to the south, and all of a sudden, my brain turned on an upper level and said, wow, I wonder if there could be a partnership with the 35 acres that you're doing for phase three of the ISU Research Park. So I'm just bringing this as a possibility, hoping that maybe Mike and Keith Abraham could have a discussion about it. I did mention it briefly in the meeting last night, and Keith did point out that with the ISU project, there is a possibility that since you're doing the stormwater management, that that may be a factor in this. There's 2 acres needed for the actual construction of the playground and the ballpark. They're looking at another acre, maybe, because they would be putting in a bathroom, handicap accessible bathroom. And one of the reasons I also thought if there was a possibility to explore with the research park would be that the games themselves are played on Saturday morning when the research park parking may be somewhat available to accommodate families who would be coming with their handicap vans. All I'm doing this morning is asking, kind of putting it out there, asking if maybe the supervisors could float some conversations. Mike and Keith could talk and see if that's a possibility or not. And with that, I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Laura, let me just make one quick comment.
Sure.
And ask that had you considered this park concept in the same manner as the Hunsaker Sport Complex?
Okay.
Because that was a private entity and so forth. Now, I don't know how the land was initially, whether the city of Ames worked out some type of the land agreement for that, but I'm concerned. I think the discussion is worthwhile of having.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not certain that personally that I'm 100% in favor of coming down as a position on a sports complex, you know, per se. At this point in time, but I think it's worthy of us having that discussion and conversation.
If I could take another minute of your time, I could answer that and a couple more questions. So they're looking at it being a city-owned, city-run facility.
Mm-hmm.
The city of Ames has put aside $25,000 for engineering costs, which I assume would be able to partner then, you know, with your current engineer on that facility. They are looking at the basics of the athletic sites being about $1.5 million. The city of Ames would own it. There would be some contribution. $50,000 came up last night, $150,000, and I guess they ended up putting in their capital improvements project, with the other possibly 80 to 90% of that money being raised by private groups, which is where it happened that our governor, Kiwanis governor for this area, okay, is on the committee. And that's how kind of Kiwanis got involved. Okay. Also in this, they're also looking at ongoing maintenance. Who's going to pay when it's time to replace this, and once again, that would be money donated to the city for the replacement. They sit on concrete slabs. There's been plastic over them that are kind of thick, and so there's a maintenance issue long term about having to be replaced. And so I definitely got the impression last night that the city of Ames would not go forward unless all of these issues were answered. All right, but it would be a public facility, publicly owned, and so as I said, other than that, I would refer that the discussion be between Mike and Keith, and then of course you two with your respective contacts. And Rick, you kind of do the city ADC or development thing there, and Wayne, you with the conservation board.
Yeah,
we're not talking
so
about a private
course,
facility.
I think it would be fair of me to tell you right now what my concerns would be with what you're proposing, and one of the reasons that I don't see me getting a whole lot interested in leading this conversation. First of all, I should start with I'm an Ames resident. I am fully supportive of the idea of building an all-accessible park. Absolutely. I really get concerned with talking about, oh, we just want to carve out 2 acres on this proposed research park, county park, for the same reason that we don't put soccer fields or baseball fields at Hickory Grove. That's not what this place is. This is not a place for soccer fields or to play frisbee golf. Or this is native, this is water quality, and it is not a spot that I envision, at least at this point, where you carve out a couple acres for this use and a couple acres for that use. It is one stretch, all native. The other thing I would say is, when it's between us and Ames, when it's between us and any other municipality, I think we have a fairly big role. I mean, we supported some renovations that they did in Story City, and we supported some things here in Nevada. When it's between us and Ames, Ames is a big dog in this. Ames has lots and lots of park property, and as somebody who owns property that backs up to one of the city parks, I completely get everybody says not in my backyard, right? You want to put in volleyball, sand volleyball courts? No, we don't want the lights in our backyard. Everybody says not in my backyard, but that's the city of Ames issue. I don't believe, while I'm supportive, I don't believe that this property is the correct property to look at something like that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you both for your comments, yep. And I wanted to bring it forward.
Anybody else? Not seeing anybody on assignments to committee names, Wayne.
No, I think I'm kind of commented on that.
Pass.
I'll pass announcements, Wayne.
Not so much of an announcement, but Paul, I did meet with Deb a little bit, and I made a quick comment with Rick just to show a copy of a letter that I had in the Tribune regarding the children's mental health work group and what I saw in the paper regarding the possible discontinuation of a service that Ames High has that goes through the decategorization funding. And I'm told that there's going to be further discussion and so forth regarding this, but I think that Story County is positioned to be a key player in a program that I think is essential to address potential mental health needs of our youth, particularly in the school setting, in the early preventive stage. And I want us to be as involved and as engaged as we possibly can. And if need be, if this needs to be taken before the region for consideration and so forth, I've asked that we do that. And so I'm waiting to hear back from what happens with the discussion with DCAT and what Dan is able to find out at a later time, and we can pull together some people to work in this area. So I just want to use that as just an opportunity, FYI, to say that I am very supportive of this, finding a way to keep this program afloat.
Absolutely. Well said. Thank you. Pass.
Board of Health, 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Move that we adjourn.
Second.
Motion to second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.